Hey, Book Fair fans, today we are talking about the importance of being earnest. It was our book club pick for this month or so. I'm going to tell you guys, this book is silly. It is, or it's a play actually, all mixed up. It's about a bunch of nonsense, but was there depth? Yes, there was. Did we find it? Yes, we did. And we're going to talk about it.
Hi, I'm Trisha.
I'm Amanda.
I'm Elizabeth,
and welcome to Book Fair Podcast.
Do you love books, or do you want to?
Are you tired of picking up the latest new release and finding it's filled with junk you don't want in your life?
Has motherhood somehow made your brain a dusty shamble?
Friend, you are in the right place. We are three friends and mamas on a mission to create a fun, bookish community. Pursuing a deeper life through the reading life.
We are your trusted source for books of all flavors.
Always grounded in truth, goodness, and beauty.
So, if you're ready for scrumptious literary fare among friends,
grab your cup of coffee, your load of laundry, or the steering wheel,
and pull up a seat at the table.
Hey, y'all ready to draw for another mug?
We're ready!
Yeah.
Y'all, homeschooling mom on the go. What a mug day. Woo! Also, P.S., do you want to get coffee with me? Because that's my life too.
I just have to read y'all this review. It was just left on Monday. So, you know, little hint, we extended these drawings through February. So you can leave
for the
a
mugs.
Review. Yeah. For the mugs till through February. You can leave a review today or tomorrow and still get drawn next week. Homeschooling Mom writes, I cannot thank you three enough for creating a podcast that reaches those of us who truly love literature and desire to read books that will add to our lives. I want to read a book that I can honestly recommend to my friends without being concerned about content. Your recommendations became even more important when I started a book club this year.
Wow.
Good job.
No, quote, latest hits for us. We're digging deep and searching for great books to read together and discuss. Thank you.
Oh, yay! Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for that.
That is so amazing. Totally warms my heart. Thank you, Homeschooling Mom on the Go. Please reach out. And also because we want to know your name. So we'd like to know your name and we would like to send you a mug. One other book fair happening last night. We had our first Ethics of Beauty discussion. So amazing. I'm so excited about this. So I thought I would plug it again. I'm not going to try to summarize the book again, but you can get online and find a summary of it. Dr. Timothy Petitsis, rather epic tome about the theme of beauty. And we are reading it together over 9 months, one chapter a month, and it is not too late. That is my message today. It is not too late. We just discussed the first chapter. It's the shortest chapter. So if you've been on the fence or if you've been thinking about it, dive on in. The water is fine.
Or if you've just been waiting on your book to arrive or saving up in your budget or something, you can also just jump in where we are. So we'd love
Absolutely.
To have you.
Email me at chat@bookfairpodcast.com or message me on Facebook.
All right, let's get into it. This is our first book club episode of the year, and the people spoke. They wanted something humorous, ended up voting on The Importance of Being Earnest by Oscar Wilde from 1895. And if you're new to Book Fair, we have a book club episode every, 6 weeks-ish. And the way we choose the book is we put out a poll of three choices. We usually get those choices from a nomination post. So people in the Facebook group really decide on what we're going to be reading, and they have great taste. So, ladies, I would love to know, have you read this before? Have you seen the play performed or a movie version? What's your experience with this work?
No, and nothing. I came in blind. I've read a lot of Oscar Wilde poetry, I'm pretty sure. Just short quips and stuff like that. And they always seem so dramatic that this kind of caught me off guard. I loved it, though. It was so funny.
Oscar Wilde is a genius. I'm just going to say that right up front. I love this play. I performed part of it in high school. I did like a scene of it in high school. I read it And since then, I have seen the play. I have watched the movie multiple times. So I was familiar with it for sure.
Awesome. I have read it before because I was cast in the play as Lady Bracknell. And my husband, Ben, was Algy. However, I had to step away from it like right at the beginning of the process because that was when I was just realizing I think I'm sick. That was a number of years ago. We didn't know about that it was Lyme or anything like that. But so I can't remember if that was my first interaction with the story or not. I've seen, you know, the movie from the 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
The two aughts, however we say it. but it's been a while. It has been a while. So I was really looking forward to reading it again. So just right off the bat here, what are your overall impressions?
Well, overall, just so funny. Like what is pretend ends up being real. You know, that's funny. But I also kind of, I'm thinking about, so maybe they're not first impressions, but I was thinking this morning, this is like all of those real formats that are on Instagram, like, we're girls, of course we da-da-da-da, and they make fun of girl humor, or we're Floridians, of course we, all of these short quips that make fun of our own society. It seems like this what this was, like, aren't we silly in this late Victorian age with our rules that we actually don't care about, you know. I thought it was a great make fun of yourself bit.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, my overall thing was just, it was just delightful. It was just delightful to revisit it and laugh and just enjoy it. And so many funny lines. I mean, truly, truly funny.
Yeah. So for some of it, I was listening to it on audio while I was driving, and it's just one of those where you just laugh. You LOL. You just laugh out loud. Can't help it. You know, it is so funny. There is so much satire and irony and how he does the opposite of what you expect them to say or do. And in that way, kind of reminds me of Chesterton, which they were around the same time. So I just thought about Chesterton so much while I was reading this, although I think they have very different worldviews and would say different things about the importance of being earnest. And I think right off the bat, I think you hit on one of the big themes about this work, Elizabeth. I think he is talking a lot about, because this was in 1895, and so the Victorian era is almost done and heading into the Edwardian era. And I think he has a lot to say about that.
Yeah. I mean, so many, which I'm sure we'll get into later, funny quotes that are just quips about, I'm going to boldly proclaim this thing that is bad manners. But I'm going to say it like I have standards. And it's like, but they're opposite standards, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm going to do my bad manners in the best manners way.
It kind of reminded me of two things with its sometimes frenetic energy and also the quick, snappy, witty, sometimes not witty dialogue. I mean, his writing is witty. I mean, the characters. Mm-hmm. But it reminds me of a Shakespearean comedy in those ways. And people get mixed up and there's mistaken identities and people are confused and with the wrong pairings. But then everybody ends up together and it's all right and orderly the way it should be. But also the screwball comedies of the 30s and 40s.
Yes.
Which I'm a big fan of those, like His Girl Friday or Bringing Up Baby, which is one of my very favorite movies, by the way.
Yes, I love that movie.
It reminds, like, I see Katherine Hepburn playing Gwendolyn or something like that, even though it's a generation or so ahead.
Yeah, I was getting the old Tom and Jerry vibes of like, the dog's chasing the cat, now the cat's chasing the dog. What is going on? You know?
Yeah. Everything is upside
down. Oh, it's all fine. It's all exactly as it should be. We'll start again tomorrow.
And it's funny because there seems to be some discussion about marriage that Oscar Wilde is putting out there, because you hear different things about marriage. It's awful. It's good.
Yeah. No romance left once the mystery is gone. It does seem like, is that, I'm going to, in a funny way, ask a question of, is this really what we want? You know, I wonder.
What do you mean?
Well, the idea of he's laying out, here's what we do, and making fun of it. It almost seems to say, like, is this really what we want? You know, we know they're in a shift of era is coming, and a lot of things begin to change around the turn of the century. It does seem almost like he's going, guys, this is what we're doing. Like, is this cool? Is this on purpose? Like, doesn't it look silly? It seems like a great, like a, I'm poking fun at myself, but I'm also asking, should we keep doing this or no?
I think that's exactly right. I mean, you asked it in kind of a funny way, but I read something once about the way, like, if you are a writer or a media person or the head of a TV studio, like something like that, and you want to change people's minds about something, you want to start to change conventional wisdom, the very first thing you do is just insert in tiny ways a new idea, like just insert it a little bit, just for familiarity. But the second thing you do is make fun of it. Mm-hmm. Because in the making fun of it, even though you may be making fun of the thing that you're actually for, it can work for everyone. Because the people who are against the thing that you're trying to bring into society are okay with the play or the show or whatever because you're laughing at it. You're not setting it up as being good or heroic. You're laughing at it. But you're getting it talked about. But the people who are for it are also okay with it because they're like, it's coming in. Look, it's getting voice. It's getting air. It's being seen. Mm. So there are so many levels of that playing in this play.
Do you have anything in mind, Tricia, in terms of a worldview or ideology or virtue or something like that, that he is saying we should be more like this?
I mean, obviously the whole name of the play is The Importance of Being Earnest, right? So I think his main skewering is that there is so much fakery in the culture that...
Was this actually earnest?
Right, that the manners... Right, that the manners and the conventions of society have everyone so tied up that no one is actually earnest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so too.
Especially in the upper class.
Yes.
I think.
Absolutely. Yeah, he's not making... There's nothing in this that would say the lower classes are involved or participating in that. This is all about the upper classes and the long-held conventions of society. And he is just showing how ridiculous it all is. But at the same time, because it's a comedy, because it's a screwball comedy that you guys just compared to, like, Tom and Jerry, like, who's going to be offended by it? Because no one's going to say, well, that's my actual life. Like, no conservative person is going to watch this and say, he's talking about me, because it's way too ridiculous for anyone to see themselves in it like a mirror. You know what I mean? So.
But maybe tomorrow that target audience sees themselves and goes,
yeah,
I'm starting to not like this.
Yep.
And the small question creeps in.
Yep.
So I'm wondering what Wilde was saying we should be instead of being earnest, because I think some of that is there.
So I actually think he's saying we should be more actually earnest.
I agree. He's saying you're not earnest as a society. If earnest means, I just quick popped up the definition and it was a little more exact than what I had in my mind, but it says showing sincere and intense conviction. So
he's skewering the society for not being earnest.
Intention. Yeah. He's like, your convictions are not sincere because none of you are holding to them. Everyone's leading these double lives of, here's what I do in front of people and here's what I actually do, because we have these overinflated, ridiculous rules of manners. And I mean, I'm for manners, but I think we could agree they had a lot of rules, you know, and it was such an offense if you use the wrong fork or whatever, which is, you know, maybe not the end of the world, actually. And so I think he's saying we should be earnest. You are not being earnest. Like, so is there actually an importance in our society? Does it seem like it?
I agree. He is calling out the hypocrisy. And I have a lot of examples. We can talk about that in a minute because they're funny. But I don't know that he's saying we should be very moral and virtuous either.
Oh, I don't think he's saying that. He's,
yeah, that's what I was meaning.
Like, can we get some honesty?
Yeah. I think it's the what he saw as overly moralistic society and the hypocrisy of that. And because at the end, it's like the characters, it's almost like he's saying that the guys had to lie and not be earnest because of the overly moralistic culture. And there's no consequence for them. And they actually end up being virtuous at the very end, or that they have a greater chance of being virtuous.
Y'all may be able to speak to this more, but I read that that part was done around the idea that at that time it was very common in a proposal because women were this like golden hue of purity and goodness, that men in proposals would often confess their whatever form of no goodness. Now, I don't think that means specific sin, but, you know, I have been a cad, but now, like, you have spurred me on to more. And so because he had always been honest, his confession was that he had always told the truth. And she was like, you know, well, maybe you'll reform from that. And so he actually confesses to being a good person. So it was like making fun of the whole, like, men have to lay out their worst deeds to say that the woman is going to be this righteous, golden, beautiful purity in their life that fixes everything, which, you know, we also know that marriage wasn't always that in upper classes at that time. So I think he's kind of pointing to that. Maybe not tradition, but it was an interesting argument or thought about it at least, because
that's interesting.
How funny to apologize for always having been truthful and then to say, you'll try to change.
And he was kind of accidentally truthful, not intentionally.
Yes.
So in other words, he was not earnest, but he ends up being earnest and capital E earnest.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
But some of the points of hypocrisy, like Gwendolyn is all over the place saying these things, like in matters of grave importance, style, not sincerity, is the vital thing.
I will say that forever now. If I am like setting my table or doing a shower, all the things where the frou-frou manners come to light for us today, I will say that. That's what I'm writing in my Common Pleas journal. That was hilarious.
I can see cross-stitching that on a pillow.
Oh, my word. Please let me hang that in the salon, actually.
And related to that, Lady Bracknell says, this is in Act 3, we live, I regret to say, in an age of surfaces. Oh, and before that, she's talking about Miss Cardew's £130,000 and in the funds.
Yeah.
And she says, few girls of the present day have any really solid qualities, any of the qualities that last and improve with time. We live, I regret to say, in an age of surfaces. Do you think that's hypocrisy, or is that Wilde saying what it should be?
I don't know.
I think that's part of the hypocrisy. Because she has, on a surface level, just changed her opinion.
Yes.
Of Cecily based on her money.
Yeah, okay.
And she's saying, now this is a solid quality. This stands the test of time. Having money. And alas, people, you know, don't see that, and it's surfacey.
I have to read the actual truth quote. At the very end, Jack says, Gwendolyn, it is a terrible thing for a man to find out suddenly that all his life he has been speaking nothing but the truth. Can you forgive me? And she says, I can, for I feel that you are sure to change.
Yes.
Oh, my word.
Well, the fluffy, empty statements, too. Charlie and I watched this last night, and he cracked up at ever since I met you, I have admired you more than any other girl I have ever met since I met you. You know, and he met her like 10 minutes, yeah. Like the day before. And there were no other girls around except for the old lady teacher.
And Lady Bracknell also says, to speak frankly, I am not in favor of long engagements. They give people the opportunity of finding out each other's character before marriage, which I think is never advisable.
Yes.
And I think that speaks, again, to this appearances over behavior. You know, that it doesn't really matter how good their marriage is going to be in terms of relationship and faithfulness and pursuing virtue together, like we see in Austin's books. But it is. And Gwendolyn doesn't care that Algy has been deceitful as long as he has the name of being honest.
What are you wearing on the outside? Earnest.
Yes.
Yep.
She doesn't care. And I don't remember where this was. Oh, Lady Bracknell. Jack is saying, which this is its own thing. Jack and Lady Bracknell here are exhibiting this hypocrisy, talking about Algy's character. This is at the end, towards the end. He's saying, well, I suspect him of being untruthful. And Lady Bracknell says, untruthful? My nephew Algernon? Impossible. He is an Oxonian, which means he went to Oxford.
Right.
And then Jack goes on to list all of the reasons how Algy has been dishonest.
Without worrying about his own alter
and so
ego.
Much of it is, while he's being dishonest, he's drunk my drinks, he's eaten my food and the muffins. Oh, the muffins.
And the keys and the sandwiches, yeah. Well, also, if to make a good match in that day and age was very about two things, money and title. And so you have some money, but you have no title because you don't know who your parents are. And so it doesn't matter how you treat my daughter, how you act, what your character is. But her losing it, this quote, to lose one parent, Mr. Worthing, may be regarded as a misfortune. To lose both looks like carelessness. Like he actually physically lost them from his pocket.
Right.
I died.
And she's like, she's like, I cannot make
in a suitcase.
I cannot make an alliance with a railway station or whatever she says.
But you have no name to bring to the table, so.
This part, I think one of the funniest things is when Cecily informs Algy that they've been engaged for 3 months.
When diary.
They just met. So she has just told him that they've been engaged for 3 months. And he says, I didn't know. And she says, very few people nowadays ever realize the position in which they are placed. The age, Miss Prism says, is a thoughtless one. Yes. But this is, it's so smart because he says that, but like Amanda, if you're saying, like if I went through this play again, maybe I think I would like to take a highlighter and highlight things where I think Wilde is maybe actually speaking the truth. Like, yeah. I think this is probably something he believes. Mm-hmm. Very few people nowadays ever realize the position in which they are placed.
Yeah.
Which I could say the same thing about today. Like that's a skewering of unconscious living, of just letting your upbringing and your family and what's expected of you and what was the path of least resistance and what seemed easy, just go down that wide road and just let it take you where it's going to take you. And you don't even ever really realize where it's taking you. Like that was true of the Victorians. It's probably true of all people of all times. So that's the kind of thing where I would say that's something I think Wilde is saying. Wake up. Hello. Look at where you actually are.
You're right. That would be a great exercise reading on a second read or third, whatever, wherever you are in reading this. There was another place like that that I did actually make a note of that I think was funny and like ironic, but also it's like, oh, that kind of hit me too. Cecily, this was early. This was, I think, just at the beginning of Act Two. Cecily says, I have never met any really wicked person before. I feel rather frightened. I am so afraid he will look just like everyone else.
Right.
I was like, ooh.
That was
actually
good.
Like,
he will.
We can all be wicked.
Yeah.
Yep.
Another is that I thought this was so brilliant. When Lady Bracknell is talking with Cecily about altering her age.
Yeah.
When she's going to evening parties. Cecily says, "Well, I'm really only 18, but I always admit to 20 when I go to evening parties." Lady Bracknell says, "You are perfectly right in making some slight alteration. Indeed, no woman should ever be quite accurate about her age. It looks so calculating." So first you've got the pun with calculating, and you're talking about numbers. But it is skewering the culture by having a character come out and actually say just something so hypocritical and deceitful,
Yeah, and basically so saying, like, women just lie about their age all the time. Like,
yeah, why would you do anything different?
Yeah, and it goes back to what you were saying earlier, how he is, I mean, this is satire. You know, this is like the Babylon Bee doing this kind of thing, where you're making a point about the culture, but it's softened, it's encased in humor.
Yep.
So it softens the blow, and it's so brilliant.
Here's another great point about the culture. This is still, I think, Act One. And Algie and Jack are trying to decide what to do for the evening. And Algernon says, "What shall we do after dinner? Go to a theater? Oh, no, I loathe listening. Well, go to the club? Oh, no, I hate talking. Well, we might trot round to the Empire at 10. Oh, no, I can't bear looking at things. It is so silly. Well, what shall we do? Nothing. It is awfully hard work doing nothing. However, I don't mind hard work where there is no definite object of any kind."
It's like, where's your substance? You have none.
This is the kind of scene with this snappy, witty dialogue, quick dialogue back and forth. And Woodhouse, P.G. Woodhouse, is another author I was thinking about reading this. You know, that almost sounds like a conversation they have in his books. And it's that, it's also, because Woodhouse talks about this too in his books, and Sayers with Lord Peter Wimsey, the change in the class structure, how it weakens more through this time, and especially at World War One, because World War One is not far away at this point, and just showing how they don't have anything to do because they are told you cannot have a profession.
Yeah.
But as it's gradually changed from the Lord of the Manor, he has a lot of work to do. He goes and visits the people on his land. He's responsible for them. And that has been shifting. And so now you have these wealthy men that really don't have anything to do and don't really contribute much. And so they have all this time to do all this frivolous and unvirtuous things, you know, behind the scenes.
But as long as they're smoking, they have an occupation.
Right. Yeah.
And then right at the end, I loved this. Jack is asking Gwendolyn, "Your decision on the subject of my name is irrevocable, I suppose." She says, "I never change, except in my affections."
Yes. And you're about to marry her. How do you feel about that?
I know. And Cecily says, "What a noble nature you have, Gwendolyn." And I think that is very pointed.
Yes.
Like the nobility. You have a very noble nature, yeah. The nature of the nobility.
Yeah. Yep.
Your affections change. You are, it is affected and feckless.
Yeah. And if he's saying to this, to the culture, to the time, to the people, "You are empty. You just do what the rules that are laid out for you are." Lady Bracknell's comment about, "I do not approve of anything that tampers with natural ignorance. Ignorance is like a delicate, exotic fruit. Touch it and the bloom is gone." So you have protected your ignorance so, so deeply so that you don't learn anything new or think any new thought or consider, is this actually virtue? Is this actually, is this actually earnest?
And that was especially a philosophy behind the education of women, that in order to keep them pure and keep them in their rightful place in society, don't let them know anything. You know, that was one of the things about all of these superficial talents. Like you know, even Jane Eyre talks about this, the accomplished, quote, Blanche. Well, what can she do that makes her accomplished? Well, she plays the piano, she sings, she embroiders. And I mean, she can read, but she's not a serious student of anything of the mind. But she's beautiful. She knows how to do her hair and her, you know, all of these outward things that were as part of that society, that was seen as being virtuous to kind of keep the women shut up and pure. And Wilde is definitely like someone like Gwendolyn, who is so, like, in some ways, I thought about playing Gwendolyn. I was like, how would you even play Gwendolyn? She is so mixed up. Like, she says so many contradictory things in this play. Yeah. Like, I'm like, how do you even play this character?
Just put your nose in the air and give a definitive voice.
That's it. But I think we, as in a different way, but as parents who do care about our children, it can be important to ask ourselves the question, are we shutting them up and keeping them ignorant? Like, are we building, are we raising them too much in a Rapunzel gilded castle to where they're not going to know how to deal with the world? And that's one thing I think Wilde is saying about the women of this time, is that they're so isolated and ignorant that they can't even think
thoughts.
Logical thoughts. They contradict themselves constantly. They make up engagements in their own mind that when the man appears, they're like, oh, well, good. This was in my mind. This is real anyway. It's like they don't even know reality from not reality.
I do like contrasting, you know, if they're thinking purity is naivety, but that's very different than innocence. It's not the same thing.
Yes.
And Proverbs, the dad is like, look, down the street is a wicked woman. Don't go down there.
Yes.
So he's telling, the parent is telling the child, here's the dangers you're going to encounter. You have to know what to avoid. You know, you can't be naive. That doesn't lead to purity.
No, I remember getting so mad in our very first book club with Constance Kopp because, you know, her mom had told her nothing about nothing about nothing. And the first man that she encountered with a plan, you know, a plan for his pleasure, not hers. I mean, it was just like, well, okay. You know, she had no idea, because to keep women pure was to keep them dumb. But that's a ridiculous thought.
There you go. Who thought there wasn't anything deep in this play?
And there is so much more we could talk about. You touched on this, kind of the roles. He's talking about roles of women and gender roles in here. We've touched on education reform. But we could go more on that. There's more about the Victorian values that we see in here. But we've got to wrap this up here. But so my last question to y'all. Miss Prism. So this is kind of back to the appearances versus behavior. Okay, the one who Mr. Chasuble said she is the most cultivated of ladies and the very picture of respectability. Two, we almost have like the fallen woman motif almost here, right? Because she mixes up where she puts the baby versus where she puts her 3-volume novel.
Think about how you carry a baby and how you carry 3 books in your hand. Like, what? I mean, what you toss it in think? By his toe? Like, what? Or what? This is not easy to confuse.
Yeah. So what did y'all think? What did you think? And Elizabeth, I'll start with you because you're the first, this was your first reading. Mm-hmm. What did you think about that twist at the end that he was the baby and just the whole situation?
Well,
that he was found in a bag.
I don't want to use today's vision on yesterday too harshly, but all I could think was, oh, so you're about to marry your cousin. Is this all still a good idea? But I know that was not a concern then, but that was my first, like, oh, abort. I kind of just thought, like, well, I guess you all got just what you wanted, and will tomorrow have anything great at all? Because it just seemed like the goals for life were done. You know, like, if the goal was marriage and a good alliance, then there's nothing else to accomplish, and nothing to live out over that marriage. But it was funny.
Which is exactly what he's trying to say. He's trying to say, is there any real meaning here?
Yes.
Is there any real depth and meaning? Which brings me to the other quote I really wanted to read. Algernon says, one should always do what a woman doesn't expect, just as one should always say what she doesn't understand. The result is invariably perfect sympathy on both sides.
That's where we need to be together.
And I think Wild might be speaking through Jack here. To your point, Trisha, this was right at the end. Jack is saying, well, Miss Prism said, Mr. Worthing, I am unmarried. Jack says, unmarried? I do not deny that this is a serious blow, because he thinks he's going to be a son with no father there. But after all, who has the right to cast a stone against one who has suffered? Cannot repentance wipe out an act of folly? Why should there be one law for men and another for women? Mother, I forgive you.
And there was one law for men and another for women.
Yes.
Yeah. But I thought, I think he's saying something here. There was not a lot of grace in the places where it should be.
Yes. Wow. In the places where it was needed. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So fun. Well, listeners, we cannot wait to hear if reading this play hit the spot for you in this first few weeks of the year. It was pretty much unanimous in the discussion post that everybody wanted something light and fun. Let us know, did this do what you wanted it to do? Was it light and fun to you? Did you enjoy it? What were your favorite quotes? We just need to have a favorite quotes thread.
Oh, the whole thing. Yeah.
Because it was just so much fun. So we want to hear your thoughts, your favorite quotes, and did you find any deeper meaning in it? Or was it just fun for you? Because after all, it's a screwball comedy. And until next time, I'm Trisha.
I'm Amanda.
I'm Elizabeth.
And happy comedy reading.
We are so glad you are here with us today. We can't wait to continue this conversation in the Facebook group. If you're not a member of our online community, look us up at Book Fair Podcast or connect with us on Instagram at Book Fair Podcast. We'd also love for you to visit our website, bookfairpodcast.com.
If this episode has meant something to you, the very best way to help us is to leave a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It is so helpful.
We look forward to more stories and shared ideas with you. So next time you've got dishes to do or a cup of tea to drink, we're here for you in the next episode. We'll see you next Tuesday.